A previously recorded Matt Slick Show.
It's Matt Slick Live. Matt is the founder and president of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, found online at carm.org. When you have questions about Bible doctrines, turn to Matt Slick Live for answers, taking your calls and responding to your questions at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right. Hey, welcome, everybody. Hope you all had a great weekend. I did. We have a bunch of people over last night barbecuing. Well, it was windy. You know how hard it is to barbecue in like 80 miles an hour? You know, wind is like that. I was just, the barbecue's just sliding across the patio, and I'm, you know, doing the thing, and people out there laughing and mocking me inside the house. Yeah, a lot of fun. But I survived. And hot dogs and hamburgers tasted pretty good. Anyway, if you want, all you got to do is give me a call, 877-207-2276, and hopefully we'll get to hear from you. Yeah, let's see. So if you want to watch the show, not a big deal, but people do like to watch. We do have a chat room with people that come in, and you can chat with like-minded. Actually, not always like-minded people. I was just talking to somebody about a rather obstreperous woman who was full of vitriol and condemnation and judgment and hatred. And I've been witnessing to her, trying to witness. But, you know, I've heard to ask people what color Kool-Aid they drink when they give me this political correct stuff. And, I just do not follow the crowd. I don't do that. Biblically or socially, I just never did, you know. That's not my thing. I just read what the Bible says, and I study and make up my own opinion about things. I don't believe what the celebrities say. I don't give a flying rip what they say. And the news, I don't care where it's from. I want to check out sources, make sure it's legitimate and stuff like that. So that's why I don't care for BLM. I condemn Antifa. Leftism is a plague. And the cancel culture is monotonously stupid. You know, just basic stuff, and I like to say things like that, and people go, what? And then they give me a call, and we talk. So if you want to give me a call, we have two open lines, 877-207-2276. And you know what? Since I've kind of primed the fire, let's just see what happens here. Okay, let's get on the phones with George from North Carolina. George, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Matt.
Hey.
First time caller. I enjoy your show.
Good.
Hey, I've been listening to Michael Pearl. He has videos. He says The Door. I wonder if you ever heard of him. Yeah, I think he's out of Middle Tennessee.
No, I have
not. He's about 74. He's got like a Leonard Skinner type beard, white beard. He's a knife thrower, but he's got some very interesting videos.
Really? No, I haven't heard of him. Just another, I should get the list of people I got to do and analyze, that is. And let's see, that's all I can do is just put them on the list. We have a lot of people to study. But no, I haven't heard of them that I remember.
Keep up the good work. I enjoy your show. Thanks.
Okay, well, how long have you been listening? Oh, okay. I guess we lost.
I think about 6 months.
6 months? And
six
I haven't scared you
yeah,
away yet, huh?
Not yet.
No. Well, I'll
yeah,
try
you
harder.
Got some good things.
Okay, now I've seen a picture of him. Yeah, you're right, with the beard thing like that. You know what? I'll check him out a little bit, okay? I'll check him out.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, man. Thanks for pointing him out.
God bless.
You too. God bless. All right. Hey, folks, if you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. Let's get to Nelson from Bakersfield, California. Nelson, hey, is it hot down there?
Hey, Matt. Oh, yes. About just in the hundreds, about.
I heard it was like over 120 in L.A. yesterday or something like this weekend. Is that true?
Oh, wow. Well,
I don't know if it's true.
I know it was about 100 and it was about 100 and, well, it was about 114 here in Bakersfield, I believe, Sunday.
Wow.
So,
man,
yeah. That
is hot.
It's pretty hot. Yeah. You know, I'm already used to it. You get used to it.
Oh, I don't know.
But
I would.
My,
But anyway, go ahead. What do you got?
Yeah, I guess my question is from 2 John chapter 1, verse 9 through 11, if you could pull that up and read it.
Anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. The one who abides in his teaching or in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house or do not give him a greeting, for the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. Yep.
Okay. My question is about, of course, about that, but in my life, because I've called before about a friend of mine that believes in modalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage him from time to time in the things of God. I have participated in his, because he comes on the radio. His mm-hmm. church has a radio show. And he talks to the youth. And we don't talk about doctrine on the radio, but we just encourage. I've only come out on there once to encourage, but, or twice, actually. And, but he knows where I stand about the Trinity. And am I participating in that line right there where you just,
Let's talk about what it means in 2 John, and you got to understand a little bit of culture, so that when we read it, I get what they're saying. So, how it was back then is I got a yawn coming on, so excuse me if it hits me. Oh man, almost. when you went from one place to another place, towns, mm-hmm. small towns had reputations. And they were largely under the obligation to be hospitable to foreigners and to travelers. Because if that town were to gain a bad reputation, then people would avoid the town. And that wasn't good for commerce. It wasn't good for fellowship. It wasn't good for reputation. And so that's just one of the aspects. Another one was that when someone would come into a town and go into a home, or there was, you know, they had inns sometimes, but a lot of times they didn't, because mm-hmm. the towns might not be big enough, and so they might have someone's home that was kind of designated as, you know, I'll take you in, or so and so will take you in. And so to do that, to take them into the home in that context, was to encourage them in their journey and warm them in their journey of whatever it was that they were doing. So if the heretics are coming through, teaching false doctrine against God, then you don't welcome them into your home. You don't give them quarters, so that you're helping them in their journey of heresy and false teaching. And that's the basic idea there. We don't want to participate in that. So,
okay.
You know, excuse me, but and yawn again. The thing is, if you are participating with him, you know, let's say it's just raining outside and his car tire's flat, and you say, hey, stay here, you know, we'll fix it in the morning. That's different. But if he's saying, hey, I need a place to stay while I get on the radio or go to churches and teach about modalism, then you can't help him out. That's the idea.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I'm not encouraging the modalism on the radio.
No. And I'm developing a new argument against one person in the Godhead, which will then refute modalism, because I haven't released it yet, but I need to perfect it, and it's going to have to do with the nature of personhood in an eternal being that is by himself. How's that possible? And I think there's a natural problem, and I'm going to be working on that. So I'd like to bring it up in a debate sometime. But at any rate, I would be willing to talk to that guy if he's
I've actually encouraged him several times to call the show, but he doesn't want to call because he doesn't know you, and he knows that you will put him in his place with the scriptures, and that's why he's afraid, because he doesn't. And so you know, and I tell him, so how well then, if you don't know him personally,
then you can introduce
us.
How
do you witness to people?
If you introduce us, you say, hey, there's Matt. So, okay, introduce. Now we know each other. Great, let's go, and or have him call the radio show if he wants.
I can send him. I normally send him the audio through WhatsApp. So if you want to share something with him, to him, I'll be gladly to forward this to him.
First things first, if he denies the Trinity, does he understand what it is? I always ask the oneness people to define what it is that they deny, because a lot of times they don't understand it. The second thing is, the doctrine of the Trinity is arrived at in a particular systematic way by looking at the Scriptures. So the doctrine will be true or false based upon that systematic approach. So does he know that systematic approach? If he does not, then he can't say the Trinity is true or false. And if he doesn't know it, he can't condemn it. And then there's other issues. Because ultimately oneness, Pentecostalism, oneness theology, denies the true incarnation and invalidates the atonement. And that's what we could talk about sometime too. All right?
Okay, okay. And one more last question with that. For a person to believe that type of theology, heresy, can they be saved?
Yes. And when I say they can be saved, technically.
It is by Jesus, yes. That saves them, not theology.
Well, yeah, they're saved by Christ, but you can have someone who's ignorant of the true doctrine and be regenerate. But after a while, when they learn the truth, they'll leave because they're regenerate. So they could be, you know, when I say this, I say, yeah, technically it's possible. But normally speaking, no. Someone who just holds to oneness theology continually and rejects the truth, no, we wouldn't call them a brother or sister in Christ. Okay?
Okay, okay. Got it. Okay,
right.
Sounds good.
Okay, God bless, buddy.
God bless, Matt.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. All right, let's get to Cheryl from North Carolina. Cheryl, welcome. You are on the air.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Many years ago, I saw a movie called The Song of Bernadette. A young girl and I think two other children that saw the vision of Mary, and they were Catholics, and people would come to, I think it's a place called Fatima for healing, and it's supposed to be a true story. I wanted to get your opinion or comment on that, as far as Catholics, the Virgin Mary, and the healings that took place in Fatima, if you have heard of that.
Fatima. Yes, I have heard of it, and it's a demonic manifestation. It is no way is it legitimate, no way is it true. And what I can do is read you some quotes from the spirit that appeared at Fatima. And even though there's miracles, it doesn't mean it's true. In Matthew 7, 22 through 23, hold on a sec, had to cough. Matthew 7, 22 and 23, Jesus says, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, do we not prophesy in your name? In your name cast out demons. In your name perform many miracles. And he says, I'll say to them, get away from me, I never knew you, you workers of evil. So just because miracles occur doesn't mean it's true. And anybody who knows the word of God should know that. And so this is what Jesus said. So this manifestation of Mary at Fatima, I'll read you what it says. We have a break coming up here in a minute, so maybe I'll stall until after the break, and I'll read the three of them because I want to comment on them. But this is in 1917, and three children said they saw this, and I have these apparitions recorded. What they some of the stuff they said, and it's heretical. Okay, so hold on. Be right back after these messages, folks. Please stay tuned. Be right back.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. Let me get back on the line with, okay, here we go, Cheryl. Whoops, yeah, there we go. Cheryl from North Carolina, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. So in 1917, in Fatima, Portugal, Fatima, which is also pronounced Fatima, is a daughter of Muhammad, which I think is rather interesting, but nevertheless. So Jacinto Marto, Lucia Santos, and Francisco Marto said that an apparition of Mary appeared to them, brighter than the sun. Now, what I also think is interesting is it happened on May 13th, and then June 13th, and July 13th. Now, this doesn't mean a whole bunch, but I'd like to say this anyway. In biblical numerics, we have Hebrew and in Greek. And Hebrew letters, there's only one set. The one set is both numbers and letters. And the same thing with Greek. The same number of, alphabet, gamma, delta is 1, 2, 3, 4. So when you add up words, you have words, you also have a bunch of numbers. And so you add up the letters and the numbers, and you have some interesting relationships that go on there. 13 is called the number of sin. And it turns out that when you take the pericope of Satan's fall in Isaiah 14, you add up all the Hebrew letters, are perfectly divisible by 13. Now, I don't put a whole bunch of credence in that, but I think it's interesting. Friday the 13th is a bad day. And most probably the reason is because that was, Friday the 13th was the day that the angel of death came over Israel, which was the 14th of Nisan. But the 14th of Nisan began at sundown, but for Egypt, it didn't change until midnight. So it was still the 13th for them when the angel of death came through and killed the firstborn of Egypt when they were getting Israel ready to be let loose. So anyway, it's just interesting. And not to put any credence in it, but I just like saying it because it's fun. But this happened on May 13th, June 13th, and July 13th of 1917. Which is not only the movie 1917, it's a good movie. So this is what the first apparition said on May 13th. This is supposedly Mary talking. Are you willing to offer yourselves to God to bear all the sufferings he wants to send you as an act of reparation for the sins by which he is offended and for the conversion of sinners? Now, when you read that, a lot of people don't, it's not a big deal. But if it is, if you understand the Bible, you'll see it's heresy. Because the only way our sins are taken care of is by the blood of Christ. It's the only way, okay? This is what the apparition says. Are you willing to offer yourselves to God to bear all the sufferings he wants to send you as an act of reparation for the sins by which he's offended? Now, wait a minute. That's heresy. So these children are supposed to undergo punishments and sufferings in order for have the sins be taken care of. That's a flat-out demonic heresy. The Catholic Church is not smart enough to recognize this. It's not spiritually astute enough to recognize this heresy because it teaches heresy. And it's one of the proofs that the Roman Catholic Church is false. And also, this is an official recognized apparition of the Roman Catholic Church. It's absolutely official. It says this is really Mary. That's what they say. It's not really Mary. It's a demonic spirit imitating her. So this is June 13th. The apparition says, I will take Jacinta and Francisco shortly. And they did die. Okay. I will take Jacinta and Francisco shortly, but you will stay here for some time to come. Jesus wants to use you to make me known and loved. He wishes to establish a devotion to my Immaculate Heart throughout the world. I promise salvation to whoever embraces it. I go, what? So the apparition is now promising salvation if you give devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. This is obviously demonic. It is. It's just, it's obvious.
And
this is July 13th. The apparition says, sacrifice yourselves for sinners and say often to Jesus, especially whenever you make a sacrifice, O Jesus, it is for the love of thee, for the conversion of sinners, and in reparation for the sins committed against the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So, now wait a minute. So it starts off that they have to suffer to make their sins right. Then devotion to Mary will bring salvation. And now you can sin against Mary. And this is a bad stuff. So it's the elevation of Mary. And there's more apparition stuff I could talk about from other ones. But that's Fatima. And there's a new movie out. I got to pay to watch. I hate paying to watch heresy, but I got to watch it. And stuff like that. So it's on Fatima.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You didn't know, did you? Oh, man.
Yeah. No, I sure didn't. Because I was really young when I first saw the movie. And recently I saw that it was being sold in a Walmart store. And I hadn't seen that movie in many, many years.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to call in and get your opinions or comment about that, because I knew about the Catholics and the worship of Mary, and I knew that wasn't right. And so, but I didn't know all this other information you gave me. This is really interesting. Yeah. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church is apostate. It's just apostate.
Yeah.
It's not a true church. And this is just one of many things. I'm going to read one more thing. This is not an apparition.
Okay.
This is from Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma by a guy named Ott, O-T-T. This is off of page 213. Now, this book has what's called a Neolobstat and the Imprimatur, which means that it's approved as official doctrine. Nothing in it contradicts Catholic theology, and it's also worthy of being taught to the body of Catholics. So it's officially acceptable and should be taught to other Catholics. That's what the Neolobstat and the Imprimatur mean, these two things. And this is what it says in this book. Mary, by her spiritual entering into the sacrifice of her divine Son for men, made atonement for the sins of man. How about that?
Yeah.
That's, can we say blasphemy? Yeah, that's blasphemy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it gets worse. Mary, I can give you all these things, but Mary delivers the souls from death. She brings the gift of eternal salvation. She's preparing a home for you. She hears your prayers.
Oh, my goodness.
She crushed the head of the serpent. She's the queen over all things, the advocate, mediatrix. She's preserved from original sin. The members of the Mother of Christ, she's the advocate, helper. Through Mary, the Holy Spirit brings the objects of God's love. Mary was taken into heaven. No man goes to Christ but by Mary. Mary is second only to Jesus. She sits at the right hand of Christ.
Wow.
We entrust ourselves to Mary's prayer. There's no better way to look when considering the church than to look to Mary. Mary's worshipped. A prayer to her is the epitome of the gospel. It's idolatry. She's a little goddess to them. Okay, there's the break. Okay, we'll talk to you later. All
can
right.
you repeat the name of that book one more time? And by
Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. Okay? Okay. God bless.
Thank you.
Talk
so
to you
much.
Later. Okay.
You too.
All right. Hey, folks. We'll be right back.
It's Matt Slick Live. Taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone. Let's get back to the show. Here's Scott from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Scott, welcome. You're on the air.
Good day.
Good day.
I got a question about the word mystic.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Jesus and the good news was considered a mystery in the Old Testament. So that make Jesus a mystic, like Jeremiah or something like that?
No.
Or what does mystic mean? Got to look that up.
Yeah, mysticism is an occultic methodology of trying to understand the world around us. It's outside of Christ, outside of Christianity. Okay, it's using, it's mysticism. Okay, and so some of the things of mysticism are found in the New Age movement, where you have altered states of consciousness, you have crystal gazing, you have centeredness, which is being taught in some churches. So it's just a way of looking in of contemplation, of absorption into the divine consciousness, to try and come in contact with the divine consciousness in order to be healed and or gain knowledge and stuff like that. That is occultic, it's demonic, and it's not Christian. And so mystery is...
No, do you agree that there's no way to be a Christian without being like Christ? And the Christian life, to me, is a secret, you know, because I'll get on to the next question if I could.
Well, it's really, Christianity is not a secret, you know. And it's, we just follow Jesus, and it's not a secret. Anybody can read about Jesus in the Gospels and be like him. Read what he says, read what he did, and that's what it means to be a Christian, is to follow after Christ, to have trusted in him. So it's not hard. Well, wait a minute. It is hard because we're trying to be like him, but it's not hard to find out. It's not hard to discover it. It's hard to do it. Christianity is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. It's just constant improvement. You know, it's not easy. It's wonderful.
Have you got time for another question?
Yeah, really fast. We got the lines loaded up, though. What do you got?
Okay, Matthew 7, verses 14, in the King James Version. I'm reading it.
Okay. You want me to read it in King James? But it just says, well, the gate is small, the way is narrow that leads to life, and few who find it. That's true. Because Jesus said it. Most people want their own.
My question is...
Mm-hmm. Go.
My question is, the narrow way, is that mean that we almost never sin?
No. No.
There are a lot of excuses for sin.
No. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. He's the only way. John 14:6.
Okay.
And 1 Timothy 2:5. Acts 4:12. He's the only way, the only name by which anyone can be saved. The way is narrow through him. He's the door. One door, Jesus. That's it. Okay? And that's what he's talking about.
Just,
a few who find
it. I guess you're right. It's the way that... speaks to the church. Church was called the Way, wasn't
it? Yeah. Yep. And there's a cult called the Way International by a guy named Victor Paul Weirwell. And that's a non-Christian cult, the Way International by Victor Paul Weirwell. But yeah, the church was called the Way early on. Okay?
Well, I appreciate it.
All right, Scott. Now, God bless.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, goodbye. Oh, that one guy dropped out. We're just going to get to him. Missed him. Let's see. Andrew from Florida. Andrew, welcome. You are on the air.
Hello?
Hi. Hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Matt, this is Carl.
Okay. Carl, okay.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Okay.
Yeah.
No problem. So what do you got?
That's good. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. My question is, in light of what's going on in this world with all this racial tension, and then people saying black privilege, white privilege, and all this, and even people, believers, talking like this, and my question would be is like, how do you bring Jesus about this, like verses? How do you explain to them, bringing the Bible into this, I would say, like, how do you explain, you know?
Well, just, I would just say that the Bible prophesies towards the end times how bad things will be. People will be lovers of themselves. They will not love the truth. They'll be violent. They will do what's right in their own eyes. There'll be wars and rumors of wars and fighting and stuff like that. And the Bible prophesies this, and it's coming to pass. And what we as Christians ought to do is pray and be prepared. There's two things that we Christians should be doing. One is to be prepared for a slowdown in the economy and things like that. Christians should normally, even during a good economy, they should have you know, a supply of food and water. That's just common sense. Don't have to go overboard, but you just have 2 to 4 weeks ready of food and stuff like that. That's just smart. And they should be preparing by praying and reading the Word and asking God to prepare them to be able to share the gospel during difficult times, because it's during difficult times that people often bow the head and turn to God. And we Christians need to be there during those times in order to help others and pray for them. Okay.
Yeah, I guess this is a two-part question as well. I would say, I have times I have debate conversation with my brothers, and he's a believer, I'm a believer, and he believes in these white privileges and all these certain type of privileges and all this, you know, okay, based on race. But like, as a believer ourselves, like, we shouldn't even think about stuff like that, because, like, well, you know, God doesn't pick and choose. You know, how do you like use the Bible to combat that? You know,
well,
his way of thinking. You know.
Let's talk about white privilege a little bit, because there are issues of people. It happens any place, any time, with any group of people, where a group of people in control has more power and control than others. There's not just white privilege. There's black privilege. There's brown privilege. There's Asian privilege. It's, you know, this idea that they wanted to focus on. And it happens everywhere. It's, you know, it's not just white people that seem to be doing better than other races. And I'm only using the term in the secular sense, at least here in America.
Yeah.
But in other countries, it's reversed. And I've talked to people who've been in other countries, and the white people, they're minorities, and they're not treated very well. Well, okay, you know, the thing is, what do we do about this? What we do is we try and be examples, and not focus on the negative, because that's what the enemy wants. Our eyes are to be focusing on that which is good, because that's what the Bible tells us. You go to Philippians chapter 4, starting at verse 6. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there's any excellence, and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. That's what the command is. If we dwell on the negative, then what we are going to be doing is participating in the darkness. If we dwell on that's not to mean, it doesn't mean we ignore injustices and things like that, but if we were to dwell on them, then we have resentment. Resentment brings anger. Anger leads to murder. Now, I'm not saying everybody who's resentful is going to be killing people. In our hearts, when we have resentment, whether the resentment is due to something justified or not justified, a perceived wrong against yourself or somebody else, and you hold on to that, it leads and has an effect on you. It leads to other things. It could lead to worse things. It leads to anger. And anger can lead to murder, whether it's by the physical hand or by the intention of the heart. And these are the things we've got to be very careful. And finally, to take a look at this, it says this: love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous, love does not brag, is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly, does not seek its own, it is not provoked, does not take into account wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. So what we're supposed to be doing as Christians is to be loving. So blacks are to be loving to whites. Whites are to be loving to blacks. Blacks and whites are to be loving to the Asians. The Asians are supposed to be loving to the blacks, the whites, and the browns. And the browns, and the, you know, this, we're all supposed to be loving each other according to the love of God. And when that happens, things get better everywhere. And it can only be manifested through Jesus Christ. Hold on, we got a break. We'll be right back. Okay, buddy? Please stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned.
It's Matt Matt Slick Live. Taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the show, Andrew. Carl, that's right. Are you still there?
Yes, sir. Yes, Matt. I'm still there.
All right, man. So, we got a break coming up right there. So, did they answer it? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right, man. All right, brother. Well, we'll talk to you later then, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. God bless.
Hello? Oh, yeah. Matt, it's Andrew. I'm behind Carl.
Behind Carl? You mean physically you're behind him?
Yeah. We were using two different phones, and his died, so I had to let him use mine, and that's how we got to be.
That how it's,
we both had questions.
Okay, well, that explains why the mess up on the name. But what's your question then, really fast? We got a bunch of callers waiting, but what do you got?
Yeah, mine is on anxiety and worry. How do I battle that? And what do you recommend? And have you ever gone through it?
Yeah, have I ever gone through it? Yeah. Yeah, I'm a human being, and let me just say that there have been plenty of times when I've complained against God, not understood why things are the way they are, whine, you know, complain, wah. And having gone through a lot of it, it's a lot easier now for me to trust him because I've seen what he's done. A lot of times what he'll have to do to get us to a place where he wants us to be is to let us go through the things that are difficult. And when we come out the other side, we realize, yeah, he's been there the whole time. For people with thick skulls like myself, it takes a little bit longer to pick up and learn. So what I would do if I were you is trust God by choice, beyond your ability to understand, and give him the glory in present difficulties. Prepare for the areas you need to prepare for, but trust him, and you'll be surprised what he'll do. And you've got to experience that. When you're young, you don't have that experience. When you're older, like me, you have that experience, and it's easier to look back and trust. But when you don't have it, it's harder to look forward to trust. It's just the nature of what we are. But he's always there. He'll never leave you, forsake you. You can trust him. Okay?
Yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. All right, Andrew. God bless, buddy. Talk to you later. Okay.
God bless. Have a great day.
You too. All right, let's get to Harry from Iowa. Harry, welcome. You are on the air.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much, Matt. Appreciate your work ever so much. If I may back up just a little bit, I had debated a church leader. Oh, it's been a couple of years ago. He was for abortion, and of course I abhor it. And I
good for you.
Used Matthew chapter 7, verses 22 to 24 against this guy.
Good.
In view of the fact that he's a big church leader in that particular denomination.
Yeah.
Anyway, the question that keeps coming to my mind is, because as we listen to Christian radio, we seem to get two sides of it. You know, you can lose your salvation and the next guy comes on the radio, mm-hmm. and you can keep your salvation, right. and you're secure. And were these church people that the Lord was talking to in Matthew 7, verses 22 to 24?
No. The ones he's talking to there, as he made this up, not that it's not true, but it's prophetic, because it's future. Many will say to me on that day, the day of judgment. And what these people are appealing to for their salvation is their works and their faith. Because he says, Lord, Lord, do we not prophesy in your name? See, Lord, Lord means they're believing in Jesus. Did we not prophesy in your name? That means proclaim the word. And in your name cast out demons. In your name perform many miracles. And I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, who practice lawlessness. So, in the name of Christ, people can do some things. And it doesn't mean they're saved. So that's what's going on there. It has to do with those who are appealing on the day of judgment to salvation based on their faith and what they've done. That's
okay, so they come with their hands full of Sunday school ribbons and whatever.
No, I wouldn't say Sunday school ribbons. I'd say what it says here. They're preaching, teaching, doing. They're appealing to salvation based on faith and their works, and they're condemned for it. Okay?
Well, that brings confusion to me, because James says faith without works is dead. So,
yeah, and I can explain that. James is, you go to James 2, verse 14, and he says, if a man says he has faith, but he has no work, can that faith save him? And then he goes on to verse 18, where he says, you show me your faith by your works, I will show you mine by my works. So verse 18 in the context is on the horizontal. It's justification before people, not before God. And so the cults, Roman Catholicism included, fails to understand the proper context of that. And the pericope is talking about justification before people, not before God. In James, that's what it's going on there, the horizontal. In Romans 4, 1 through 7, is talking about justification before God. That's the vertical. So when it says faith without works is dead, he's saying, don't you know, O foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless? And that's why it says, you show me your faith, I'll show you mine by my works. It's on the horizontal. It's not before God. It's before people. That's what's going on in James, okay? And Matthew 7, 22 and 23, it has to do with justification on the vertical. They're trying to say, look, faith and works, God, and he's condemning them. James' faith and works is before people. They're not condemned. It's completely different. Okay?
Hmm. All right, sir. Good. Very good. Thanks so much, Neil.
You're welcome. God bless. Yeah. All right, let's get to Marky from Tennessee. Welcome. You're on the air. Anya Scott, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for taking my call. So I spoke to you a couple times, and I really appreciate your ministry and everything you guys do at CARM. Mm-hmm. It's been very helpful in my walk with the Lord. Today, I have a topic that I wanted to mention about and kind of get some pointers. Maybe I overlooked something, but I'm heading to a conversation with a pastor tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Of a different church. We have two different views on the topic of divorce and remarriage.
Okay.
My view is that divorce and remarriage is not right. In most cases, the exact case that we're talking about tomorrow, the church, they believe that if the unbelieving spouse would abandon the believing spouse, that the believing spouse would then have the right to divorce and to remarry somebody while that first spouse is still alive. I don't think that that's supported by the Bible, and
let's see.
Just trying to get your take on this thing.
Well, let's read what that is taken from out of, let's see there, where'd it go? There we go. Oh, man.
1 Corinthians?
Yeah, I'm looking for my Bible program. I'm going to read the whole thing. 1 Corinthians 7:15 is what it is. But what I want to do is just read a little bit of the context, okay? And it says, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through the believing husband. For otherwise, your children are unclean, but now they're holy. Yet, if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. So, if the unbeliever leaves, then let him go. You're not under bondage. So it seems to say, if the unbelieving one goes, you're free. You're set free.
Now, with that, my take on that, reading in context versus 12 and 13, speaking about how if the unbelieving spouse would be pleased to remain with them,
mm-hmm.
That they would remain, and
yeah.
Then dropping down to that verse that's in question, verse 15, is the bondage meaning that they no longer would be in bondage to have to be forced to stay in that marriage. But, you know, I agree, you know, divorces happen for many reasons. So that would be okay. But verse 39 speaks about basically to death do us part, you know.
Yeah, but
in the same context.
Yes, but when you jump around, are there any qualifiers in between those verses? A change of topic? Is there anything in a change of mode? Or what's going on? So that's why you always got to be careful. But what it does say in verse 15 is that the person is not under bondage if the unbelieving one leaves. Now, in a marriage, we have a covenant, because a marriage is a covenant. That's what it is. It's a promissory covenant before people, before each other, and before God. So it's a Trinitarian covenant aspect in marriage for its validity, a true marriage, that is. And so when an unbeliever leaves, they're breaking the covenant. Because that's what it says, you know, when I have a covenant, when I do marriages, you know, I married somebody 3 months ago, I'll say you're to remain till death do you part, and you're to stay faithful to each other and, you know, provide for each other, etc. That's what you do. And if one of them leaves, well, then they've abandoned and they've broken that covenant. Therefore, the marriage covenant is by default broken. Just as if someone were to commit adultery, in the covenant, you're supposed to remain faithful sexually to one another and only, that's what it says, and keep only to her, keep only to him. That's what that means. So if they break the covenant, the marriage covenant is broken. Now, that means that the person has the freedom to divorce, not the obligation. They have grounds to divorce. And so that seems to be the case of what's happening here. Let them go if they want to go. Now, it does say also in this present circumstance, I forget exactly what verse, but it's this present situation talking about a persecution. And so there is debate here about what this means. It does seem to say if the unbelieving one leaves, then let them go. That's it. They want to go. You're not under bondage anymore. You're not bound. And that's what it sounds. That's what it seems to be.
Are you, if I understand you, so you're saying that that would then give that believing spouse the okay to go and remarry somebody else?
That's my opinion.
While the first spouse is still alive.
Yes, that's my opinion.
All right. Because the only last two verses that is verse 10 and 11 in the same chapter speaks about that if,
right,
they would either remain unmarried or be reconciled.
Yeah, but it says if they want to stay, but we're out of time. We just can't go any further. Once you call back tomorrow, we can we can talk about it some more, okay? Because all right, man. God bless. Sorry, Jan from Virginia. I know you waited a while. Apologize for that. Please call back tomorrow. May the Lord bless you all. I hope you all have a great evening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. God bless. Bye.